Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Willisburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a dandy. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man.
When we had John Fetterman on, he also, what did he say? Because he's the mayor of Braddock. He was like, yeah. We're talking about local politics a little bit. He said, local politics really brings out people's personalities.
Yeah.
Do you find that's true?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think so.
Well, welcome to Barnstorming.
Yes.
This is Jordy.
And this is Taylor. And we are here joined by
Leslie Danks-Burke,
Shane Nickerson,
and Josh Marshall.
So we're here in Blossburg, lovely town.
Yeah, absolutely. We drove all the way up 15. It was actually crazy, you know. Got out of Lewisburg, took a right, and took it all the way up.
That's it.
Yeah. Pretty much,
that's
yeah.
It's really easy drive.
And then hang another right. We came across the bridge, and the creek was pretty high.
Yes, it is.
We may be here for a while.
I've been monitoring since six this morning. It's actually down a foot from six this morning,
really?
So that's good news.
He's a water guy. He's on top of it.
Yeah. As I was driving into Lewisburg this morning, there was a police car that was had pulled somebody over for speeding. And it just really irked me. It's like, we are having a weather emergency right now, and there's absolutely nothing that you could be doing besides pulling people over for speeding. Like, I don't even think that many people are speeding right now. It just seems like my pet peeve. We talked about it on the car ride.
No, that's okay. You can talk about it again. Yeah.
But anyway.
You sound much more rational than on the way up.
Okay.
All right,
yeah. It really irked me this morning. Miss Leslie here, you are a...
Did you say Miss Leslie?
I don't know why
it's
I said
nice.
That.
It's kind of nice. It's flattering.
His mother is from Southern.
Memphis. His mother is from Memphis.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm Southern, son of the South.
Somewhere around age 40, I passed over from Leslie into Miss Leslie. Right? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, I just couldn't remember your last name.
Leslie works. That's
Leslie?
Good.
Leslie? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Recently started a new PAC, a political action committee, called Trailblazers PAC. That's correct?
That's right. We started, Josh and I started, along with another group of people, Trailblazers PAC, in 2017 to support candidates for local office all across Pennsylvania and the whole state of New York. So we are working with candidates like Shane, who run for village mayor or borough council or town supervisor or county legislator all across the two states.
So local is less than state?
Local is county level and below. Local is the most important in my view. Mm-hmm. Local is the people who set your property taxes. They're the people who fill the potholes. They're the people who monitor whether the bridge is going to get flooded. Shane is on top of that this morning.
Yes,
sometimes the same person doing all three.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. And without a heck of a lot of input from voters, because people tend to think more about national politics, but actually it's the local folks who really decide where your kids are going to go to school and decide how much is going to be in your tax bill at the end of the year.
So Trailblazers, sorry, has a great, I'm not going to do it right, it's like bringing politics to the front porch and out of the back room.
Our goal is moving politics out of the back room onto the front porch.
Can you tell us more about where that, both like the because it's a great phrase, tagline, where it came from and kind of the thinking behind it?
So we've got a corruption problem in American politics, and it happens at the national level, it happens at the state level, and it happens at the local level too. And I think that happens anytime regular folks get less involved. And interestingly, you know, there tends to be a greater influence of money in politics at the local level than there is even at the national or the state level, just on an order of scale. If you're running a campaign, you know, and the whole campaign budget costs $5,000 for village mayor, then a $500 donation in that campaign, that's big money in that race, and that could, you know, swing the whole race. And that happens a lot in local politics, but folks just don't pay enough attention to it. So our goal is to change that conversation by letting the voters know where the money comes from. And there's no rule that says you can't tell the voters where all your dollars are coming from. And so we ask our candidates to do better than the law requires and disclose all their money. We don't care where their money comes from, but we ask them to disclose it all and let the voters know what the money in politics is all about.
Do you have I guess this is actually a two-part question here. Did you have an aha moment about local politics where you're like, oh, this stuff really matters a lot? And then did you have like an aha moment where you were like, and then I'll start this PAC? Yeah.
For me, no, I didn't have an aha moment about local politics. I grew up in Colorado, and my folks were involved in local politics when I was a kid, and I remember, you know, I remember the caucus happening at our house, and I remember going door to door and handing out campaign literature. So that was just part of being a kid, was you stacked the campaign literature for your dad as he went up to the door, right? And I would ride along in my little red wagon and make sure I had the flyers ready for him, right? That was my job as a 4-year-old. So I always have had an affinity for local politics. The aha moment for me was when I recognized how significant the money in politics issue is at the local level, and also recognized that if you're a candidate who stands up for clean government, you're not just a good person, you're also a more powerful candidate. Mm. And that's really interesting, is that the candidates that we supported last year who took a stand and said, look, I'm going to do better than the law requires on this issue, regardless of where they fall on the political spectrum, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or what they think about, you know, fracking or what they think about abortion or what they think about any issue, if they're going to stand up and be honest with the voters about where their money comes from, they're more likely to win. And that's a real aha moment.
Cool. And so this started in 2017. I would imagine, did you reach out to candidates, or candidates reach out to you, or
a little bit of both? We sort of find as many people as we can. We found Jordy this way. Anytime we find a community that has elections coming up, this is how we found Shane. We just sit in our office and start telephoning and calling anybody whose name pops up in the local paper and say, hey, we're Trailblazers PAC. We like to follow candidates for local office who want to stand up for clean government. Do you know anybody who's running for local office? And try and send them our way. And it's just a two-state front porch networking system, and it seems to be working out so far.
How did you hear about Trailblazers?
Well, they came to our library and gave basically a 101 on how to run a campaign, mm-hmm. and I had already been in office, but I was like, what's going on? Wait a minute. And so I just went more or less to see what was happening, and I knew a couple of people, and I met some people there that are good friends now, that I was blown away by the whole concept of it, first of all. And also, it was actually a really informative training, things that, you know, I definitely, you know, could use, and it was nice.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really impressed. I was in State College, and Melissa, you were there, and Adam Alderson.
Denise King.
Denise, right. Mm-hmm.
and Joe Messmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
part of our team.
And you all were so, like, positive. The quality of materials was so great. You all were so positive, and you know, because of, I think, other things going on, I was the one person there, and I was like, I would have been really down in the dumps, and you guys were so like, no, this is part of the hard work, and I was like, oh, this is great, these are good people, you know, they're not going to get ruffled by a small setback, so, and the other thing that
we think that every single candidate matters,
right.
You know, even if it's just one person who's standing up in the community,
yeah.
That candidate can make a real difference.
And do you have some things also with candidates where you, in terms of putting, investing money into their campaigns, like, in terms of how you want, like, I thought there was something about, like, trying to match local dollars, is that something?
Right,
you about?
So we ask candidates to fundraise locally. We ask them to walk the talk on being local in every way that they can. So, you know, if you're running for mayor and your village has 1,000 voting households in it, we ask that at least 1% of the voting households donate into your campaign. You can raise the rest of your money wherever you want to, from PACs, from outside corporations, from big money, small dollars, whatever you want to do. At least get 1% of the voters to buy into your campaign, to actually invest in your office. And if you can do that, then we match dollar for dollar those voter dollars in your campaign.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So the you match what is what the 1% or the bigger?
We match as many dollars as the voter earns from their actual, or the candidate earns from their actual voters. So once they hit that 1% threshold, any dollars that they earn from actual voters will match. And what we're trying to do is make the voter voices count double.
Yeah.
Right? So if a voter invests in a race, a voter buys into a race, we match that for the voter so that the voter's voice counts double. And we would do it on both sides of a race,
yeah,
too. We're
that,
happy to endorse on both sides.
And that's, I think, the important key to it, right? as it's not just one side or the other. Because I found in local politics, there's a ton of times when I totally agree with people on the other side of the aisle. The truth of it is the big issues that separate us, we're never going to even discuss at a council meeting.
Well, I've seen it earlier. You mentioned abortion. Local politics has nothing to do with abortion.
Exactly. Like there's issues that why even bring them up and find something that divides us when there's so much more that brings us together.
It's nitty gritty stuff like doing a municipal water or regional water.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff that we all agree, this needs to happen. Let's figure out the best way to do it.
Well, I don't think it gets any more local than your story, Shane, of starting this cafe, 242. You told that story when we came to Blossburg and did our workshop, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Can you tell it?
Sure. Yeah. So my wife and I, it's a long story. So I'm a roofer. I'm a commercial roofer. I have a construction company that focuses on commercial roofing. The building next door to where we're at caught on fire years ago. And the bank called and said, Shane, would you look at the roof? Well, I went over to the burned out building, looked upstairs, and I could see the sky. There was no roof left. So I went back and said...
Oh. That's a very patriotic ringtone.
Is that...
I don't think...
That's a good ringtone.
That's me. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, okay.
That's lightning, though.
It was. I was listening to it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's so funny because
I was like, where is it coming from on my
product
dropping?
Yeah, there you go. We'll talk about it later. So the bank, wanted me to look at that, and I looked at it and went, reported back to the bank and said, guys, look, this, I can do it, but it's going to be expensive. And they said, you should buy that building. Well, at the time, my wife was had a teaching degree and wanted to couldn't find a teaching job, and mentioned about opening a preschool. So I was kind of looking for a building a little bit, and so I said, "Well, what do you, Jill? Come here, let's check out this building." So anyway, to make a long story short, we bought the building for nothing because it was totally demolished. It cost us $10,000. And then we remodeled it, opened a business there. As I was working on that building, the gentleman who owned this building came over and said, would you like to buy my building? And of course I said no, but he said, I'm going to sell it cheap. I got insurance money. I just want to get rid of it. I'm tired of being here. Yeah, so I went from a construction standpoint. It looked really bad, but it wasn't that bad. We purchased this building for next to nothing. Rented the apartment, had different things in here. One problem that every small town or most small towns struggle with, unless you're fortunate enough to be in Lewisburg and have college and things happening, is empty storefronts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this was an empty storefront. So you said parking was a problem in local trees, man, is a terrible. You can't be on the right side of anything to do with trees. If you cut one down, you're a jerk. If you plant one, it's in the wrong place and it's the wrong species for sure. Right. So there's no winning to the tree conversation.
I'm on the State Tree
Commission. Okay, so you understand.
Yeah.
So my wife, who is much smarter than I am, said, what we need to do is we had to replace the trees on Main Street because they were heaving sidewalks and growing into the pipes, and it was, they had to go. So to replace them was tough, and we knew about this. My wife said, look, we need to just put out a SurveyMonkey, have an arborist give us three kind of trees that'll work and let the community decide, and then we're out of it. Yeah. Okay, so that's what we did. But there was room at the end of this. We had room in the survey. So my wife, in her infinite wisdom, put in there what business would you most like to see. A coffee shop was number one. So then we made it our mission to find a coffee shop. So we went everywhere within a 100-mile radius about and said, look, we'll hook you up $200 a month. Just get in here. We want to do this for the community. Nobody wanted it. My wife had grown her preschool into three preschools, and she had sold it and said one night, what do you think about me becoming a barista and and us opening a coffee shop. And I said, I think it's, you know, probably not a good idea. And she said, well, wait, you know, I could get trained in this. And if we, you know, we talked about it, and our thing was from the beginning.
I'm sure running a coffee shop is much easier than preschool.
No way. Yeah. It's all relative, okay. I guess. But the hard thing was like, honestly, to open this and make a business that's going to support your family on a main street in the middle of nowhere is hard.
Yeah.
You know, and so we said, okay, we're not going to do that. Our goal is to create a place where stuff like this can happen.
Right.
And to create a couple of jobs, a few jobs, right? Mm-hmm. Even three is a big deal in Glossburg.
Mm-hmm.
And if it breaks even, we're happy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're never going to look at this. So I'm really happy when it breaks even. But nice. It's, it was definitely for the right motives. And it's been a success, you know. Mm-hmm. The community enjoys it. We've created a few jobs. And for the most part, it breaks even most of the time.
Well, and the folks in Glossburg now have a coffee shop.
And we now have a coffee shop.
And you're now mayor. I mean, what kind of mayor puts out a survey, says, what do you need, folks?
Yeah.
They need a coffee shop. And you gave them a coffee shop.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing, too, is that, a big problem we have in rural America is we don't ever promote entrepreneurship. Really don't. In our schools, we don't. You know, for generations, we've been telling kids, I heard it, you know, my parents' generation heard it. Look, you need to go to school and you need to get really good grades so you can get into a good school so you can get the hell out of here, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't have to work in a foundry.
Right.
So you don't have to be a roofer. So right. You don't have to work
in a coffee
shop.
I think it's also kind of American culture. You know, how many movies are like a kid from a small town goes to New York or Los Angeles?
Yeah.
You know, the idea is you go to the city
to make it. And so we're kind of missing the point, right? I mean, so with the end of that conversation, what are we looking for? And it's just to be happy, right? Mm-hmm. Every human being anywhere on the planet, I don't care what your situation is, what your religion is, what continent you're on, you just want to be happy, figure out, navigate.
Live comfortably. Yeah.
Live comfortably and find happiness.
You graduated from college and you wanted to, you know, you decided to come back to your hometown.
I did, yeah, small town.
Did you grow up in Lewisburg?
I grew up in Lewisburg.
Well, East Buffalo.
East Buffalo. There's
a big
difference.
Big difference.
Greater Lewisburg.
Got it.
Yeah.
We say that to annoy people.
West Lewisburg.
Annoy that East Buffalo, Lewisburg tension.
Yeah. Well, Lewisburg's really East Buffalo.
Yeah, that's right.
there you go.
So I was actually born in Williamsport and then raised in Lewisburg, East Buffalo. Yeah. Sometimes when people come to town through Bucknell or, so are you from here? You know, it's like, well, I was born in Williamsport, you know?
Yeah.
but that usually gets a laugh. But I went to college in Minnesota, and many of my friends moved to Minneapolis afterwards because that's like the closest big city, or Chicago. And that was sort of my plan, but when push came to shove, I was like, you know what? I just need to go back home and because all of my friends from school, you know, or from high school and stuff like that were basically elsewhere, you know, and it's just, you know, I grew up being sort of involved in politics like you. I remember my parents getting involved in like the local noise ordinance when I was in, you know, middle school or something like that, or maybe even younger. You know, and going to township meetings and stuff like that and talking with folks. And one of my political mentors, a Republican, Hank Baylor, always talked about brain drain. You know, people come, you know, they get a degree from our great high school and then they peace out and we never hear from them again.
Yep.
Don't do that, Taylor. And so so I came back and have been doing stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have a similar story? You said you recently graduated.
Yeah, I did. I recently graduated from Mithaca College. I started volunteering with Trailblazers PAC last May and continued to through May of 2018.
And how did you find them? Did they advertise?
No, they didn't advertise for me anyway. It was just a professor that Leslie had known from her campaign that put us in touch, and went in to interview with them, and it wasn't, I sort of anticipated a more intense interview role, but they seemed pretty casual. And
we were blown away by how wonderful you were. Just
yeah,
right,
I mean, I don't think they anticipated a resume to approach the table.
But you're from a smaller town in New Hampshire?
Yep,
right?
I'm from a small town called Orford, New Hampshire.
Orford,
like Chevy or Ford.
Okay, that's good.
So yeah, I kind of also have an early on connection, like Leslie, to local politics. My mom is the Register of Deeds for Grafton County, mm-hmm. New Hampshire. So I was, you know, working, you know, putting out signs with her from, you know, my early middle school days. But she was really that do the whole thing herself kind of person, and she's been in that role ever since. She actually has a primary coming up this May, vote Kelly Monahan 2018.
Shameless plug. Recorder of Deeds?
Yep, Register of Deeds for the county. So she oversees the whole records department altogether, and she's, you know, part of this network of Register of Deeds throughout New Hampshire and throughout the country. They get together all the time to register deeds.
So do you think that there's this pull for, like, going to Ithaca College? That's a college that's nationally known. It pulls people in. They have a great music program and communication program. Like, your classmates, were they like, what are you doing? Is it Horseheads.
Yeah.
And were they like, Josh, what are you doing?
Yeah, I actually did get a few of those that are like, why are you driving 45 minutes from Ithaca to your internship every week?
Yeah.
And that was fine. It was just because I liked what I was doing. I had this opportunity with Trailblazers PAC to be researching things that were important to me. I looked into a lot of the statistics that you see, like, on our website, on our flyers here, are things that I looked into. Like, you know, you take Seneca County, 70% of their local elections were uncontested last year. And this information isn't, you know, available through the State Board of Elections website or anything like that. It's all county by county in New York State. So
you got to call them up.
You got to call every single county individually, and some of them have them on their website, some don't. But that was a trend I saw, not just Seneca, all over New York State, that, like, more than 50% of local elections in most counties in New York are not contested at all.
And I think that rings true in Pennsylvania as well. I mean, just trying to recruit candidates is so difficult for these smaller things. You know, we have judges of elections and stuff like that, inspectors of elections, and it's like two days
yeah.
a year,
yeah,
you know, but it's, you know, people are like, you know, I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But we gotta have them.
One of the interesting challenges that we have at Trailblazers when we go around and do these workshops, like the workshop that we did in Blossburg, or the workshop that we did that you came to, Jordy, is convincing folks that they are qualified to run for local office. It's amazing how many people will think to themselves, Congress, you know, I could do that. I could go to Congress and I could.
Recorder of deeds.
I mean, you got to know your deeds
to do that.
You got to know it. Wheel up to the corner, which I find very strange.
Well, there you go.
You
got
to.
You might need some qualifications.
You might need some qualifications. And people don't think to themselves, I could run for school board. I could be a town supervisor. I could be a, you know, borough council person.
Yeah.
And yet they can. If you're involved in your community, if you know that there's a problem with the water rising up to the bridge level, and that periodically we gotta dredge that creek bed in order to deal with this challenge, if you know that as a person who has a house right at the foot of that creek, you're qualified to participate in the village meetings around that topic. And it's an interesting process to start to convince people you too can stand up and run for office and really have a say and really make a difference.
So there are these really interesting statistics about, I think I heard from Emily's List, or maybe Women Winning, that women need to be asked, like, twice as much as men in order to, like, say yes to running for something. What is your experience with that thing, you know?
I think that's true. I think it's much harder to invite a woman to run for office than it is to invite a man. And I think it's partly because women are socialized not to expect that of themselves, right, from birth. And women also, for whatever reason, I don't know why exactly, but you line up a group of men and you ask them, hey, could you be president of the United States? And a lot of those men would say, yeah, you know, surrounded by the right people and with the right background and with the right resources, yeah, I could make some
current occupant.
Well, you know, I could be president. And boys are told that. You can grow up to be president. Anybody can be president, right? you ask a group of women, could you be president, or could you be congressperson, or could you be town council person? And women, for whatever reason, will often say, oh no, my friend would be so much better than I would, or oh, you should talk to her instead, or you know, I'm really kind of a behind the scenes person, I don't like to put myself forward. So it's harder to get women to think about it. But then once you do get them involved, you find that women who've been involved in their PTA, or they've been raising children, or they've been walking the sidewalks. We had one candidate that we worked with last year who ran her campaign almost entirely about the sidewalks on the way to the elementary school.
And
the fact that
strollers.
And the sidewalks issue, actually, it had to do with state funding for infrastructure. It had to do with how the allocation to rural counties was significantly less than the allocation to urban counties. She was in a very rural area, and the sidewalk funding just wasn't coming through the Highway Transportation Department. She blew this issue up because she was concerned about pushing her stroller to the elementary school. And the sidewalks are now fixed in her community.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
super cool. Was that in New York or Pennsylvania?
That was in Groton, New York.
I mean, I think one thing for me, you know, and I'm still learning about this, but that's a challenge in terms of trying to, I mean, I'm going to be more explicit about being a progressive, having progressive values, and you know, my area, like, it's not always a big deal in local politics in terms of, like, traditional right-left, but I think it does matter. I mean, to give you one small example, you know, we're getting ready to do budgeting, and this will be my first time, but I'm like, we spend an awful lot of money on impermeable roads, and if we really want to talk about trying to get to a greener economy and more sustainability, you know, we need to push. Like if we just kind of a lot of local government seems to be status quo. And if we just keep doing what we did last year, we're going to keep spending, you know, mm-hmm. a huge chunk of our budget on roads.
Definition of insanity, right? You keep on doing the same thing, you get the same result.
And I kind of lost.
You're going to be more progressive, and you're going to stand up for permeable roads.
So one of the barriers is, I don't care about labeling those things that way, but it does have to do with, like, the underlying that, I think, is an idea that government can be a force for good, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the national scene does intersect the local, because there's this incredible idea, there's two things that are really toxic. One is that government is always the problem, not the solution.
Right.
You know, to me, that's such a kind of toxic mindset, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, of course, sometimes government can be a problem, but, you know, so can companies. Like, let's look at the Great Recession, you know? Like, Wall Street did a great job driving the economy into the ground. The other one is, that this idea that I find a lot is people feel like in rural Pennsylvania, well, you know, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, they take our money and we don't get much from it. And the reality is we get more, right? The amount of money that flows back to the rural counties in general is more. But to talk about that, you know, people, Lewisburg just got a $1.2 million grant to do some flood remediation, mm-hmm. and some, which is great.
Rail
trail stuff. We don't have, you know, we didn't have an extra $1.2 million lying around in our budget. We have a $3 million budget.
Yeah, but the other part of it too is that a lot of times at the local level, at the small towns and stuff, they don't know how to get to those resources necessarily. Yeah. So far
but
out
they
of
also
the trade
assume
set.
That whatever they're paying is too much because it's going
Absolutely.
Away from them. Right?
Absolutely.
And I don't have a great answer. This is just an observation. But do you run into that people are like, either one or the other? They're like, don't try and do things because government's a problem.
Yeah, all the time. But. So that's what our job is, right?
Yeah.
Is to bridge that gap. I'm
yeah.
not in office to marry people and kiss babies, right? I need to. I need to be.
I don't
able
get to do
to...
that. I'm not here. That sounds fun.
It's the.
I got called a fascist and a communist last week. which is one of those. You got to pick one or the other.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
You can't really be both.
One of the things that we need to do is be really specific. Well, it's just like that. The water issue, you know, people were up in arms. And then, you know, it takes...
We were talking about that before the podcast. Do you want to really quickly...
Yeah, real quick. So our community is uniquely set in our area geographically over water resources. Really big aquifer. Kind of right at the sweet spot. And our municipal authority has been proactive over the years of purchasing land where they knew where these aquifers were and kind of trying to protect them. So our neighboring communities north of us, which is downstream, which is a rarity, but north of us downstream, they have some really bad water quality. The people there, the majority of them, have to drink bottled water. And they can use water for, you know, taking showers, washing their cars, washing their clothes, sometimes they'll stain their clothes, but unless
it's not
you...
Really defracting.
It is not. Not at all. This long before. Unless you have money to afford
you can
treat the water. It's about $8,000 for one of these systems. So the people
it's like
that
your own personal water treatment.
Right. So the people that are able to afford that and treat it say, well, we don't want water. We're fine where we're at, you know, but their neighbor, literally right next door, an elderly couple, might be in a totally different world. You know, so
but if I understand this, these aren't even your constituents, right?
Right, but they're still my neighbors, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I'm saying, like, you have a sort of
well, we have
a bigger
we have
vision
people
locally.
Here that are saying, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. This isn't us. You should just worry about Bosberg.
Right.
I mean, honestly, we're all in this together. We need to stop. This is happening.
Could you say that one more time?
We really are all in this together.
Yeah, yeah.
And we need to stop dividing ourselves along, you know,
silly municipal borders.
Yeah, and political borders.
Yeah.
Right. It's really easy for me to get into a mindset that I am not working with these knuckleheads or knuckle draggers or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done, you know. But the truth of it is that, again, I'll go back to the thing, we all want the same thing. But we have to have communication skills and be able to talk about it rationally. And I need some of those people because, you know,
they're going to come to your coffee shop.
And they're not only that, they're going to bring me back to the middle. Because I can be out in left field, right? And so if I want them to compromise, that means I need to compromise. And they're those friends of mine that are out in right field. If we can remain friends and get back to the middle. And really, that's where stuff locally happens. It's not like we talked about. Mm-hmm. These big political issues that are, we're never going to have to, it's never going to hit a borough council meeting. We're never going to have to discuss these issues that are holding us apart, you know. So let's focus
but
on what we
water
can.
Treatment.
Water
yeah.
treatment we can agree on, man.
Yeah.
We can say, yeah, this is a good thing. And the other thing is our neighbors that we're working with. So this is, we have water, but we're working now with Covington Township, Putnam Township, Richmond Township, and now Mansfield, who is really reluctant to come on board, said, you know what, we want to be part of this too. We want to be good stewards, and we want to help our communities too. And what's opened up is all kinds of information sharing that probably never happened before.
That's really cool. What a success story.
It's
civility
wonderful.
In politics.
I mean,
who knew?
These things, too, that Pennsylvania, I don't know about New York, is so fragmented. And there's so many little municipalities, maybe townships or boroughs, that even they don't often know what they're doing, and they're literally a mile away.
And the reality of it is that we need each other more than not. You know, a lot of the... you know, like a PennVest loan, you know, or a grant. When PennVest looks at this and says, wait a minute, Blossberg is looking for this for themselves, but here's one. It's got Blossberg, it's got Richmond, Covington, Putnam, Mansfield. There's five municipalities looking for this. It jumps up on the scoring level of a PennVest loan, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot more that we can do together in partnership.
And you're going to save money over all of them doing it individually.
Well, sure.
It's going to bring gains back to the whole community.
Now, so we're dedicated. We put two people from each municipality on the board. It makes up the board of directors. We still have an independent municipal authority for Blossberg to take care of Blossberg. This is in addition to that. But by bringing everybody into the fold, it's not like one group is controlling it. We all have a say. And I can't even say that for sure we're going to take the PennVest offer that's on the table, because quite frankly, our constituents can't. It's too expensive for them.
Shifting gears a little bit back to Trailblazers, so like, why New York and Pennsylvania? I don't know a lot about PACs, but it seems like a two-state. It seems like they'd either be one state or the whole country.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're really focused on building locally from the ground up. And we're in Horseheads, New York, and Horseheads right on the border of New York and Pennsylvania. And every single road in the area goes through Horseheads. Horseheads is a town about the size of
Rossburg. And we have a lot of people who will live in Pennsylvania and work in New York State.
So would you say you're more focused, though, like we sort of imagine that kind of big, like central Appalachia, more than New York City or Philly?
We haven't gotten real far south in Pennsylvania, but we are doing work. We had a workshop in Brooklyn just recently. We have an event planned out on Long Island. We have plans for something up in the North Country. So we are all over the state of New York. If you go to our website, actually one of the wonderful things that Josh did for us last year was he created this beautiful map with pictures of all of our candidates and where all of our workshops were. If you scroll over the map, you can see where we've been all over New York and Pennsylvania, and that's on our website. And we've been pretty much everywhere in New York. We haven't gotten as far south in Pennsylvania as we'd like to. But again, we really believe that this has to grow from the ground up. We really believe that local politics is where the rubber hits the road. This is where it starts. This is where our republic, our democratic republic, is grounded. And if we're going to change how politics is done, if we're going to be more civil to each other, if we're going to make sure that voters are calling the shots rather than big money interests, it's going to have to start at the local level.
So you guys have made some endorsements for the 2018 elections already?
We haven't done endorsements yet for 2018. Actually, we did one race. There was a village race in March in New York that we endorsed in, and that candidate won, Dan Keating, in Pittsford, New York. But most of the races, obviously, are in November, and those candidates are really just gearing up now for their local races. And in Pennsylvania, there aren't any local races in 2018. So all 2019 will be a big year in Pennsylvania. So our call to folks in Pennsylvania right now is, if you're thinking about running for office in 2019, get in touch with us now.
And because how folks do that?
Trailblazerspack.com.
Okay.
Go to our website and, you know, type in your name and the office you're thinking about running for, and get in touch with us. We'll put you in our mentorship pipeline. We'll help you understand how, you know, what forms you have to fill out, what bank account you have to open. There's just so many hoops to jump through to run for local
there
office.
There are. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, Taylor's helped suburb people run and help, like, walk them through that, right?
Yeah.
It's complicated.
You'd think it, you know, setting up a, I mean, and I guess you don't have to do this, but a little P.O. box number, a phone number that's not your own personal cell.
Even filling out campaign finance forms, you know, it feels a little like, I've gone from being a spectator to a participant, and that can be in a pretty abrupt transition.
And that is one of the other things that we tell candidates, is it's actually a lot easier to just disclose everything. When you're filling out that campaign finance form, instead of trying to figure out what I have to disclose and what I don't have to disclose, there's no rule that says you can't tell everything. And so just put it all out there. It's a lot easier to be honest. It makes it simpler to fill out the forms.
Literally.
And it means all the voters know where your money's coming from.
You know, I've met a few people. There's a guy in Lewisburg who set up a company, and he buys wool from maybe Chile, or like really high quality wool, and it goes somewhere, and he has somebody who like contract to manufacture it, and then he distributes, and it's like, it's a very, like, to me, like, early 21st century kind of entrepreneurship, right? But because of the way that supply chains are integrated, and you can do work, remote work, and you can set up these kinds of contracts, you know, 100 years ago, it would have been a factory, a mill in one place, and the supply would come. Instead of he's in one place, and, like, the sourcing, the distribution is all spread out. And in a way, it seems like, you know, the template to do that as a 25-year-old is easier than to run for local office. You know what I mean? Like, I still feel like, this is just me being Jordy, but both, like, the way that the knowledge is structured, the way you get the forms, a lot of government forms, we like to complain about the petitions and how kind of antiquated they are in the landscape. You know what I'm talking about.
And you have to
about.
Have the right number of
exactly
signatures, and if you have any stray remarks on the petition, then it gets bounced.
You know, and so it may seem like a small thing, but I think that creates a lot of little small barriers that add up to a larger barrier of why people don't know what it is. And the other piece, this is part of why we do the podcast, we have a local paper that does a pretty good job covering local
news.
Local
papers,
Yeah, but still, you know, it's easier to find out how my congressman voted than what are the important issues.
Right.
Even at the county level, like, I don't know that much about who's on the county governance, and I'm good friends with one of the commissioners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing is, government belongs to us. Right? It belongs to the people who pay for it and who are voting in it. And very often, sometimes the folks in government forget that, and they forget who they're supposed to be accountable to, and they set up these barriers that make it much harder for regular folks to participate. And so when you bump into one of those barriers, one of the things that we do at Trailblazers PAC is advise our candidates, you know, push past that, because if you're asking a question and you're not getting an answer to your question, that's not how it's supposed to work. They're supposed to give you that answer. That's their job.
And the other thing too that we do as elected officials too much is that we rely on expert knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we somebody comes in and they tell us about, you know, whatever the issue is, the sidewalk issue or whatever. We just totally, almost exclusively rely on expert knowledge. We need people. We need information to make good decisions.
Yeah.
But very seldom do we ever get or ask for public knowledge.
Yep.
Right? Because they don't come to the meeting. So what we've done in Rossburg is we go to them.
In fact, I think sometimes some local officials just like that. They don't actually want the public there because it just messes with the agenda.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, but the other thing, too, is that...
Like, it's much more comfortable for me to assume I know what my constituents want than to have to deal with the messy details of what they do.
So we were fortunate enough in Blossburg. I'm also on the library board. And
What don't you do?
There's a couple of things that I'm not as efficient as my daughter on a unicycle yet. We're getting there.
You're not in the fire department?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. A big supporter, but no. But with our library board, right now, the state of Pennsylvania, there's the Harwood Institute. Has anyone ever heard of this?
Harwood. Oh, Harwood.
And YouTube it, because this is going to change everything for everybody at this table and everybody who's listening. And it's all about, right now, the state library system in Pennsylvania picked out 17 libraries in the state to run a pilot program. We got this grant.
Wow.
And we went to state college and got trained in this, this practice, and it's the Turning Outward Initiative. Because if you're affiliated with libraries at all, it's a lot different than it was when any of us were in school, or at least...
I was on my library board for 10 years.
Okay, yeah. So it's different now. It's not, the focus isn't books, you know?
No,
like
it's digital literacy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So at our library, we are pretty progressive. We have yoga, and we have lot of things that you wouldn't think of as the library. But anyway, we're fortunate enough to do this. So in this practice, we had to start having community conversations. We try to do them about no more than 30 at a time. And I was terrified of this, to be honest with you. And we have a coach that we communicate with monthly. And I was like, man, I've been to town meetings and stuff like this that's like a town forum where it's just anybody with an axe to grind shows up. And he said, well, no, it's structured a certain way. It won't be like that. So I'll just do the first four questions with you guys really quick. So the first question is, and you can say whatever comes to your mind. There's no wrong answer. I'm not allowed to participate, only to facilitate this conversation. What kind of community do you want to live in?
Sustainable.
So that's really general. Give me a little bit better.
Okay.
Give me two examples of sustainability.
Okay.
Because that could mean politically sustainable, it could be financially.
I want to live.
Hold on, you'll get your turn,
all right,
sir.
All right.
More walking and biking.
Yeah, I run a tight ship.
Okay,
I
want
more walking and biking. Is that
okay? All right. Okay. Okay.
He took mine.
Is that right? More walking and biking.
Yeah.
Out of everything, the first thing that pops into you gentlemen's mind is walking and biking.
Yeah.
You must live in a hell of a nice town.
Safe.
Okay.
Well, that's
safe. Yeah. Okay, safe. Yeah, so let's talk about
really
safety.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to get hit by a car every time I try.
Right. Okay. And so I'll get back to safety, but go ahead.
I want more jobs and more income in my community.
More jobs and higher income.
And higher incomes in my southern tier community that I live in.
Okay.
I would like to see thriving, self-sufficient local business and less poverty.
And less poverty.
So I guess that's kind of the
okay,
other
now,
side of that token.
I want to live in a town that doesn't have to worry about lead poisoning.
It doesn't have to worry about lead poisoning. Why is that important to you?
Why is lead poisoning important to you?
Any of these. Why is it important to biking? Why is the safety important?
Well, like the walking and biking... it's kind of like talk about like canaries is like the species that tells you something's like wrong. So if you have good infrastructure planning and you're thinking about the long term, you create, you know, you're not just rebuilding roads, you're changing the transportation infrastructure to accommodate more walking and biking. It gets people healthier, they don't have to have a car.
You're recording.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So that's why I said that.
Okay.
Another point on that is that most people can, you know, unless you're physically impaired, can walk and bike, and not everybody can afford to have a car. So that's another reason why walking and biking is important. Safe walking and biking. The lead thing is important to me because it's, I have a couple friends that have had to deal with that in their rental properties. And it's just a real bear to try and fix, and it's really unhealthy.
The jobs.
I see just too many people who aren't employed, too many people having to depend on social welfare programs just to check. You know, they lose their job, and that's the end. They're going to lose their house, too. They're going to lose their family.
So let's just play devil's advocate a little bit. Why is that important to you? You seem to be doing all right. Like, why is it? Why? What is it? What is it? Like, what I'm getting at is, what is it that makes you care?
Well, a couple of things. It's a really good question. First, I care because you're right. I'm doing okay personally, and my husband and I make a good income, and we have a nice house, and we're doing okay. I don't like seeing the community around me struggling, so there's that way that it's painful for me. And also, I know that in the long run, the long term, if the community around me is struggling, it's only a matter of time before that starts to affect my own income. So there is a personal piece there,
right,
too.
I mean, I suppose the poverty issue I mentioned is kind of the other side, the same side of that coin. It's an issue everywhere in America. I mean, especially in New York and Pennsylvania, over the last, you know, 20 and 30 years, we've seen a ton of businesses pick up and leave, and then the community is devoid of jobs and income.
And poverty is hell. It's terrible.
And it's a cycle. And
down.
It's a cycle
it
that people struggle to get out of.
I mean,
and there's institutional things that keep people in poverty, and that's exactly what a clean government official would be acting to go against.
It's like when we pulled up and parked in front of 242 here, we parked down the block a little bit. We didn't park right in front of you, and two storefronts down is a vacant storefront.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was vacant when I was here a year ago.
No,
I think that there was something in it.
That's right.
And it registered with me. The minute I got out of the car, I thought, that storefront's vacant. It didn't used to be vacant. And the first thing I thought is, I wonder if that's going to affect 242's business.
Yeah.
I wonder if that will mean less foot traffic into Shane's coffee shop.
Yeah.
It affects everybody around. It's not just the person who owned that storefront.
Yeah. So let me. I'm going to ask the next. Why are these issues?
It's the third or fourth question.
So that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
How is that different than the way you see things now? Which you kind of answered, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it different in Lewisburg or East Buffalo.
Yeah.
How
there is a West Buffalo Township also.
so tell me, how is that different than the way you see things now? Obviously, you mentioned that you're afraid to get hit by a car.
Sorry, what would be different if what I want comes true?
How is it different than it is right now? Boots on the ground. I go to Lewisburg. I get on my bicycle.
Okay.
And
like small example. We were talking about parking earlier, and people complain there's not enough parking. Every time I try and bike anywhere, there's nowhere for me to lock up my bike.
Yep.
And people would be like, well, there's a bike rack three blocks down. I'm like, you complain about having to walk 50 feet from your car, I'm going to be able to leave my bike pretty much wherever. Pretty close. Like, there should be a bike rack every block.
And then it's locked up at the streetlight. People complain about it.
About that.
Right on.
And it's funny, you were surprised earlier, kind of hashtag first world problems. Like, oh, not enough walking and biking. But I mean, first of all, it's something I said I would run on. And we have these other issues too, but it's like I was saying, like, if we have more sustainable businesses downtown, like poverty, then all those things are kind of bundled together.
And the same thing with what you all said, in lower income jobs, people having to leave, people have to go where jobs are. And that's obviously what we see in our areas all the time.
I know a lot of people who are, you know, paycheck to paycheck, who have to borrow rides, and there's this constant kind of like ride sharing.
Sure.
You're aware of this too, but the rural poor in transportation is a big problem, and there's much less density. A lot of normal urban solutions wouldn't work around here. And that becomes a drag. You know, I can't get to daycare, or I can't get to my job.
Yep.
Yeah, there was somebody at church last Sunday that was talking about you know, she's volunteering, giving somebody a ride to his work, and she has to get up at 4:30 in the morning to go in.
And she's a nice person, but that is not a sustainable solution.
Right.
You know, not everybody can call somebody at 4:30 in the morning. And kind of related to walking back, I wish I switched to this, is you can't buy food in my borough, right? Like, we all talk about how we love this little borough where we can
or
walk.
There's not a grocery store.
We have one.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
That's,
yeah.
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a rarity in the county.
It's a rarity for small communities to have. Yeah. Food, grocery stores.
But you have to, you have to cross a highway basically to get to the grocery store.
And it is biking distance, but it's dangerous
to cross
the
highway. And there's no really great way to cross it.
So, and then the last or for the short thing is really 10 questions, but the fourth is what changes do we have to make? To make it the way we want.
We need more Trailblazers pack endorsements.
There you go. Right back around. Right. No,
we need people who live, eat, and breathe front porch politics.
Yeah.
Who are willing to move the politics out of the back room. Make the deals on the front porch.
We don't have a lot of porches. Do we have to build porches?
We don't have a stoop works. A stoop works.
Okay.
A curb works.
Okay.
We'll take any door bearing.
That's right. So what we found in our community conversations, that overwhelmingly people wanted to live in a safe, some people it was sidewalks, some people it was, dealing with street lights or the heroin epidemic, and then welcoming was really one of the things, newer people said, people are friendly, but I don't really seem welcome. I was like, what? I was offended. It's like, what are you talking about?
Have you seen my coffee shop?
Yeah. I mean, and they're like, well, I just, everybody here knows each other for a long time, and I just don't know. I want to be a part of things, but I don't know how to get there, you know?
And sometimes I don't feel like a local in Lewisburg
because
my grandparents weren't from there.
It's tight, right? Yeah. It's tough. Up here, you know,
I'll never be a local.
Yeah.
I'm from Tennessee.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that I'm a borough council. Yeah. I'm very involved.
Or that you've been living here
for 16 years.
Well, the other thing is that everybody wanted it connected. And that's exactly what we're doing here. Now, so in the process of this, how do we do this, right? How? Come on, it's a small town. We know everybody. I think I probably know everybody in here right now, you know? But how could we not be connected? But a lot of it is information.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have, as stupid as this sounds, we might have a church doing a spaghetti dinner for somebody that's ill at the same time that there's a chicken barbecue for the fire department or this. And we cross a lot of things, a lot of organization things. So, like,
a
community calendar.
Right.
How easy? It's harder to get done.
It is harder to get done. I mean, you know, I would love to see, borough manager.
I would love to see, like, on a building, like at the month-long calendar or something like that.
You could hang it here on that big wall there.
But even things like, I find sunshine laws, we're just talking about how people interpret sunshine laws. You know, recently our borough manager said, well, here's this workshop that's coming up that is about flood remediation for homes. And I said, oh, cool, I'll go and put it on Facebook. He's like, well, you might want to be careful because anything you put on Facebook may mean that you're subject to... I'm like, are you kidding me? I agree with transparency, but surely there's a way that we can do this.
I know. It's hard.
We've got to get past this gotcha culture.
Yeah.
Into the idea that, look, we are all in this together.
Yeah. But these are the issues. Getting a community calendar is so hard.
And also a community directory. I've been thinking about this, right? And you know, people would have to opt in, but imagine if you had a directory, and some of these, you know, there's the next door neighbor, and Facebook operates
this way sometimes.
But, you know, I could see who these people are, and they could reveal what they want, you know, how old their kids are, but, you know.
Then we have community conversations where we had one at our elderly, we went to the elderly group at our Riverside apartments, it's public housing. You know, and had a community conversation. They said, well, the problem is, and I'm not allowed to take part in these conversations, so I'm constantly biting my tongue.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, there's nothing for kids to do, you know? And when I was a kid, you had all this and this and this, and I'm like chomping at the bit until the end, and like, actually, there is a lot of things for kids to do, and I start listing them off, you know?
Yeah.
And we have Saturday morning skateboarding with the mayor, where if you don't have a skateboard, I'll make sure you have one.
That's,
you know?
That's awesome. Yeah.
We have a skate
park
here, by the way. And
that's
awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's super cool.
Do little girls skateboard too?
They do, some of them.
Good.
Yeah. My mayor, Judy, she's the mayor of Lewisburg, she's been the mayor for
So what she was years? The guidance counselor at my middle school, basically. It was intermediate school, fourth and fifth grade. And in fifth grade, I think our current mayor died or something like that, and then she became the mayor and has been the mayor ever since.
Yeah, nobody wants the job to be.
The solicitor and the mayor went to high school in Lewisburg together, and I've been in rural council meetings where they start talking about, like, you know, Joe Sylvester and what was he doing in the 11th grade hallway in, you know, 1960 or whatever. And wow. So it's good. So, I mean, it could be bad, right? Like, that could lead to that kind of, like, shunning you up. They do a good job of sort of sharing their knowledge. So do we have any last, should we do, here's something that we like to do that's kind of fun. It's like, do you have like a, something that you really wish could change about politics or governance?
Something petty.
But something kind of petty.
Yeah.
Like my example that I've used, I should stop saying this because people are tired during the podcast.
Well, you have others, don't you?
I have others. Give me a sec.
Jordy, I have a hard time believing that you don't have other gripes.
Exactly. Well, here's he thinks he is really disturbed that we have we are the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Oh yes, that's a good one. But it's the Department of State. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
It should be the Department of the Commonwealth. You're right. If we're Commonwealth, the Commonwealth. So sometimes we say state government.
Okay.
You know, let's just be consistent.
Yeah, I see what you're getting.
Yeah.
It's not
mine. Mine is, and I'm going to, I always say the same one, but I think it deserves to be recognized and talked about as many times as possible. In Pennsylvania, when you do a petition to get on the ballot, they give you so little space to sign your name and your address and all that stuff. But if they just did it so that it was in landscape view, going horizontally, the problem would be solved. But if you did it landscape view, your petition's disqualified. So we're not looking for anything big here, but just landscape petitions. Yeah. I think the stroke of the governor's pen, I think, would take care of it, and everybody would be happier. That's my
pick. Do you have any?
I have one. It's local. It's very local to Blossburg.
Yeah,
but
I love it.
So the fact that my idea of changing the name from the Blossburg Borough Council to the Blossburg Jedi Council fell flat on its face kind of pisses me off.
Yeah.
It would be a lot cooler if I had a Jedi Council meeting to go to tonight.
Oh, man, that is crazy. I love it.
That is great.
You should just...
That's going
to
be our Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Oh, man. When we do a Best Of episode, that is absolutely going to be on there.
We should get Henry on that.
So what...
Liz, do you
have
one?
What's the... I don't think I can follow up the Jedi Council. I mean, that's pretty impressive. We do have this theory at Trailblazers PAC that we are changing the entire world of politics one front porch at a time. And it's a long project. I mean, this is going to take, there's a lot of porches, stoops, curbs out there. But, you know, we're committed to it. We're doing it one porch at a time. But I don't think I can beat the Jedi Council. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
I don't know if I can match that level of petty on either side of the Jedi Council.
I'm sure that calling through a bunch of counties asking for
that
information...
That blew my mind, actually.
It could be higher level than petty.
The first time that I initially tackled this issue, I was so naive as to send an email to the State Board of Elections, like, hey, could you just let me know, like, all the local elections that are happening? Because, of course, you have that on hand, right? You're the Board of Elections. I just get back like a one-line email, like, no, the wording of it was key. Because local elections are a hodgepodge of village, county, and local elections, hodgepodge was the word they used, we couldn't possibly keep track of that.
Right.
And it would be a logistical nightmare for them, I agree, but one that they are kind of responsible for.
A logistical nightmare that we are...
That we were able to solve with, you know, 64 phone calls over a week
and
or two.
And about 8 months of work.
Yeah. A lot of Google searches, a lot of... Yeah.
I tried to find all the elections that were happening in 2017 in our county, and it was, you know, you call up the person, you know, there's one person that knows all of them, and it's the same person that does the ballot, and it's like, well, but yeah, also, you know, this person resigned from this township, and this person resigned from that township, and we never really figured out an auditor for that township, so that's going on this one, you know, for a two-year position. It's insane.
So I had.
But it's not online.
So I want to do. This is something we've never done before exactly. But I was also thinking about, like, I bet most people have, like, what you think is like an interesting idea or a good idea that doesn't get talked about. So here, I'm going to give an example.
Left field. Yeah.
It could be left field, right field, you know.
Or just
or a soccer pitch.
Yeah.
You know, not even a field. No, but yesterday we were talking to Keith Pemrick, who's been in governance, and he's a lobbyist, and he was kind of making the case for, like, you know, sometimes lobbyists isn't always bad. It's not always, you know,
right.
Facebook's 50 lobbyists. You know, his example was an aircraft mechanics union. And I was thinking, you know, we have a model of public defenders. And why don't we have a model of public lobbyists, right? Like, if you're a group, I don't know the exact sort of parameters, I think, like, if you're a group and, you know, you get some sort of minimum threshold of citizen involvement, then you can get a lobbyist for your campaign, right?
Wow.
I haven't thought through it a lot, but I was just thinking, like that's the core piece. And another sort of slight part of it is, I remember hearing this thing once that up until Reagan, government attorneys who worked for regulatory agencies like, you know, the FTC or the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the lawyers, right? They want to be able to be competitive with the other side. So government salaries were pegged to the prevailing wage rate in the industry they regulated, right? So you get smart people out of law school not having to choose between working for, you know, Enron for whatever, a gazillion dollars, or you know, an energy regulator for a tenth of that, and the cost to the federal budget is negligible. It's almost nothing. And then you've got the best talent you can get, right?
So on both sides.
On both sides.
Revolving door.
Right. So I know public defenders are usually less paid, but just the idea of public lobbyists, I was like, oh, why not, right? So that's an idea that I'm not even sure I'm right with it.
I can come up with a lot of reasons why not, but it is a creative idea.
But do you have a like, creative idea? I mean, Front Porch Politics is there already, so.
Something that I didn't expect to be such a creative idea, but it turns out it is very creative, is doing more than law requires,
mm-hmm.
right? This idea
yeah.
that,
mm-hmm.
okay, the law says you don't have to disclose these donors and there's these loopholes and these places you can hide your money, and just don't do that. Just instead, just
yeah.
disclose everything.
Yeah.
I thought it was sort of easier, you know? I thought it just
yeah.
made life easier. It turns out it's also kind of revolutionary. And it
yeah.
really throws people for a loop when they mentally think, wow, I can do it differently than the law says to do it.
You know,
I can do better.
And the light bulb really just went off for me now for what you're saying. Like, earlier, like, I got it, like, actually, but, like, emotion, I'm like, yes, because when you only disclose the minimum, you're sort of participating in a mindset that says, it's going to be strategic advantage for me to hide things.
Right.
Right.
And when you turn around, it's like, I'm going to be as open as possible because that's my strategy.
And we have a little bit of pushback on that, but just last night we were on a conference call with the candidates in our pipeline, which is another part of our mentorship program. So Leslie was talking about some fundraising tips, and I was talking about some nuts and bolts of filing. And we get a lot of pushback on, in New York State, you don't have to disclose
mm-hmm.
a donation under $100. So
right.
A lot of people will have these $99
right.
unitemized contributions. And the response that Leslie always says for people is to just give that $99 donation back. Say, you know, I made this pledge to disclose every single penny that is going to come into my campaign. So here's your $99 back. I'm going to stick to my integrity. And more often than not, as Leslie always says, is that they either give that money right back to you and say, go ahead and disclose it, or they say, you know what, here's $200 instead. Because people appreciate that.
Yeah. My idea, and it's not my idea, it was my uncle's idea who floated it to me years ago about training, like, ravens or pigeons or...
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah, to pick up trash or, like, cigarette butts. And it actually turns out
it's going to get you a foul in the pigeon lobby.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I was just thinking, you know, union busting.
Yeah. and if you, like, this, you know, for one cigarette butt, they get a little morsel of something.
Or maybe, scarily, they get the nicotine.
Or, yeah, I was about to say,
oh,
that's
yeah.
probably more
that
effective than nicotine.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah, we wouldn't
but
want that.
I like creativity, though.
Yeah, but it actually turns out that some, like, city has done this, and it works because they're so smart.
And they pick it all up, and then
and
we don't have the trash on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Genius.
Yeah.
Genius.
So
yeah.
That's out of left field.
You already gave us Jedi Council, but you got one that's
yeah.
Less,
I don't. I don't know
serious.
If I can. Yeah, I don't know. You know the thing. I think with the biggest thing since I've been mayor that I've come up with that I didn't expect was the whole public knowledge thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like really. And you have to force stuff out of people. Like, it's not an easy conversation to have. And it's trying to figure out the aspirations and the concerns of the community. Concerns, not gripes, concerns. is harder to get to than you think.
Yeah.
But aspirations, a lot of times people have ideas and they're so afraid to voice them, you know. And it's really nice seeing people feel empowered, you know, even when they're not in office. You know, I have people, guys, as a small town mayor, stuff that I didn't sign up for, settling neighborhood disputes over barking dogs.
Yeah.
Hey, man, your dog is killing your neighbors, you know.
Come
guys
on.
Gotta, yeah, come on, you know. But when you talk to people, like really talk to them, I canvassed before and running for, you know, mayor. And one of the big concerns is there was a junk shop at the end of the street on Main Street that had tires stacked up out front. Used tires for sale that they left and they just threw blue tarp over and it looked terrible. And everybody's like, we have to clean this place up. It looks terrible. Blah, blah, blah. So I started going to council meetings just to kind of see the feel and what I was getting into. And they were talking about an ordinance that you couldn't sell anything on Main Street out on the sidewalk and that would clean this up. And I'm thinking to myself,
that's stupid. Yeah,
that's too
big.
Well, that's what I, right. So the day after, when I was the mayor-elect, I went over and went into the gentleman's store and said, hey, listen, Shane Nickerson, mayor-elect, I'm going to be mayor. I canvassed, and the biggest concern, dude, was these tires on Main Street. Everybody's up in arms with them. And there's talk about an ordinance where no one will be able to sell anything on Main Street outside on the sidewalk for any purpose because of these tires. Has anyone come to talk to you about these yet?
Mm-hmm.
No. I said, well, I am. I said, I'll make a deal with you. If you will take those tires off Main Street, I will help you carry them inside, and the mayor will owe you a favor. And he shook my hand and said, sure. And I ended up buying a couple of old tools that he had there for my stepfather. And the guy was a nice enough guy. But nobody stopped to talk to him. Again, expert knowledge. We were waiting for the solicitor to draw up whatever, because he's our expert when it comes to this kind of stuff. Nobody wants to talk anymore. You know, nobody wants to put
but they'll post on
there.
Facebook.
About they'll post
to
on
each
Facebook.
Other. Yeah. You do all kinds of stuff anonymously, or when you think.
Yeah.
Well, how can people keep up with the Trailblazers Pack? How can they find out more if they want to donate, if they want to be a candidate?
So stay on our website, on our Facebook page, our Twitter feed. We're constantly pushing information out there. We're always looking for stories. This is a story. This is a great story, the public knowledge piece. I love that concept, Shane. And, you know, that's the sort of thing I'd love to write up and push out through Trailblazers Pack. We're always looking for stories of people acting locally in a honest, clean way to get out there. And we push it out on our Facebook and our Twitter and our website all the time. And especially if you know of any candidates for local office who are thinking about running in 2019 in Pennsylvania, we have money to donate. If the candidate will stand up for clean government and stick with our principles, it doesn't matter what their positions are on other issues, we'll match their in-district contributions. And so we hope candidates will come and apply for our funding and stand up for clean government.
And Shane, how can people keep up with what's going on in Blossburg and what's going on with you?
Yeah, so blossburg.org is one way, and we're still trying to get out the bugs of our community calendar and stuff like that. It's a harder thing to implement for us than one would think. The other thing, too, is that we're on Route 15, or just off Route 15. It's really easy to get here.
Stop in for a cup of coffee?
Man, anytime. Yeah. You know, it's neat because there's all kinds of great things happening in the world, but guaranteed there's all kinds of great things happening in your community, in my community, but we never stop to check it out.
Do you guys have like a yearly arts festival? Or?
So we have, guys, we started a nonprofit for the betterment of Blossburg over a decade ago now. It's called Blossburg Vibe, Visions in Business and Entertainment. And it was kind of, it was a way to get a Main Street program from the state. It was a funding source to funnel that through, mm-hmm. and it grew into creating all kinds of stuff from a community garden to have an awesome fall festival. So we have...
That's good. You know, there are too many August festivals.
Yeah, no, this is cool. And we have a hot dog eating contest.
Oh,
that
my.
Is... It's pretty...
Do you have a vegan category?
For we don't. I'm sorry, vegans? Nope, you can just cheer on. Yep.
The, so you just get to eat the bread.
Yeah, you can eat the bread, the wet, soggy bread.
Double bun.
Yeah. But we have, so it's funny because, talk about grassroots. So my construction office is a lot of times the office that the phone number that is listed on all kinds of different events and stuff. So the second year of the hot dog eating contest, my phone would be ringing off the hook, and it would be professional hot dog eaters. I didn't know there was a career, but there is.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd say, "Hey, what's the purse up there?" I'd say, "Huh?
So what are you talking about?
How much is it? What do you win?" "Well, you get a trophy and $100." And they're like, "Oh shoot! Well, if the purse grows, you can turn that into something." So now it's $200 that I donate to the cause, and we.
I think there's something to be said for keeping the professionals out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the kind of backbone we have, we had some semi-pros come and get their asses handed to them by local boys.
Yes.
So, so
that's great.
It's a big deal,
and
though.
Some of your candidates called it lunch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it was a contest.
What are you talking about?
This is Wednesday.
But it's right across the street in our plaza. And,
is it?
And we made it there, and we made it in a small area by design, because a lot of times at a county fair,
people spread out.
I might see less than 200 feet away and wave, or maybe I don't know if she recognizes me and keep going. But if you cram people into a small parking lot and we have to walk past each other, then we have to say, "Hey, what's up, man? I'm glad to see you here." It'd almost be rude not to say hello. So we're really focused on bringing people together. All the games are mostly free for kids. And we have old school hayride where kids ride around town, pulled by a tractor.
That's great.
It's awesome.
And now I would imagine the leaves are changing. And
It's beautiful. Everything is...
Take a drive out, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the dates?
I don't know. Go to Blossburg. I honestly don't know that. It's in October.
I think we might all have to come back.
I wish you would. Why don't you do a podcast? Can I get you guys to come up and do a podcast then?
Yeah. I'm being written off the show.
What do you mean?
Well,
maybe you could be a hot dog contestant.
Okay,
you could come be a hot dog.
You need a career? I heard
vegan,
it's a $200 purse.
Yeah, $200 exactly, purse. You could use that as a student, right?
Exactly, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. But, Jordy, maybe I think you should come up to Tyler.
We should do another. There are so many little fun falls and festivals. You could spend a lifetime doing quirky festivals in Pennsylvania towns.
Our podcast is called Barnstorming, so it is in our nature to go and barnstorm.
Yeah.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you
That's
all.
Yeah,
thank you
thanks
so
for
much.
Coming
thank
to
you.
Blossburg. We appreciate
very
it.
Much.
Appreciate it. Cherry Valley, Greensboro, Mill Grove, Cantrell, Smithville, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela. Oh, well, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley, man. I be the mountain air, man. Travel up ahead, my share, man.